We're talking many to many changes to logging, filtered includes, so many new features in EF Core 5, and this whirlwind tour exposes them all on .NET. Hello, and welcome to another episode of On.NET. I'm your host, Jeremy Lickness, and today I'm excited to bring Arthur into the show to share with us a whirlwind tour of EF Core 5. Arthur, welcome.
Thanks, Jeremy. So as Jeremy said, we're going to look at EF Core 5 here. We just released it. It's got lots of new features. I'm going to go through them pretty fast. The idea here is that you will get your appetites wet and you can go find other places like our documentation, community stand-ups, and we'll have some links in the show notes for those things to find more details. I'm also going to show some things that EF Core can do that EF 6 can't, even if they're not new for EF Core 5, just because I think there's a lot of things that are out there that if you're familiar with EF 6, you might be interested to know that EF Core can actually do better. Well, what is EF Core? So EF Core basically lets you save your .NET objects to a database. So I have a really simple model here. I have a blog class and a post class. Blogs have names, posts have title and content, and each blog has a collection of posts. So I basically want to save that into the database. Now, EF Core supports all kinds of database schema approaches, such as a database first where you can reverse engineer, or migrations, which allow you to modify the database as you are making changes to your application, evolve it essentially. I'm not going to do either of those things in this. For the sake of quickly playing with things, doing demos, doing prototypes, EF6 had a thing called database initializers. We don't have database initializers in EF Core. The reason for that is it's better for the application to determine the one place where everything should block for the database to be created. Having Entity Framework determine that blocking global location was not a good idea. So instead, you can just do ensure deleted and ensure created. Ensure deleted will put us into a clean state with no database. Ensure created will create the database and have it set up with our schema. So I'm going to run this. And it runs, and we don't see any error, but we also don't see any output. So really, we assume it created a database, but we don't know. So I'm going to add this new feature in EF Core 5 called simple logging. And here, where I'm doing my use SQL Server, I'm just going to put log to console write line. And this is going to log all of our output to the console. Simple as that. This is very similar to EF6 database.log. So a lot of information there. Now, we don't actually want all of that information. Hang on, let me pull this back on here. There's a lot of information there. We don't actually probably want to see all this. So I'm also just going to filter that to just things at information level. So I'm going to do log level information. And let's run that again. And now you can see we're just getting the database creation stuff, just the important stuff. So, yep, we're creating a table for blogs, we're creating a table for posts. Let's put some data in it so that we can actually, you know, have some data stored in the database, because at the moment it's just empty and that's not very interesting. So, go back to my code. I'm going to copy paste into here after we've created the database some code that will basically take the context, add to it, i.e. start tracking a new blog with some posts, and then call save changes. Now let me run that again. So now you can see that we've outputted in the log that we're inserting into blogs and posts. We've got one insert for the blog and three inserts for the post. However, the parameters here have question marks. You can see all the parameters here have question marks. And that's because we don't want to include what could be sensitive data from your database in logs and exceptions by default. And that was also true with EF6. However, that can make it super difficult to debug what's going on because you don't know what the IDs or what the data is of the thing that failed or worked. So in EF Core, we have this thing called enable sensitive data logging that you can just easily add after your log to. Works with other kinds of logging too. And if I run that again now it's a lot more useful because now I can see that the each of the parameter values in here. And also, if you go back up to the top, we put a warning out in the log when you switch this on, just to make sure that you're aware that you've turned on sensitive data logging and you don't want to let that escape anywhere. Of course, this may not be sensitive data, but we have to assume that it is. We can't assume that anything in the database is not sensitive. I'm going to show one more thing really quickly that EF Core does, that EF6 doesn't, and that's batching and save changes. Now, there's a threshold to this. So when we were saving these four objects, one blog and three posts, EF Core didn't create a batch. However, the threshold is, I believe, 5. So once you reach 5 records, inserts into the database, EF Core is going to batch that. So let me run that again, and we should be able to. My console was locked. We should be able to see now that instead of we've still got one table to create the post here, and we're still doing insert into blogs, but insert into posts now is also happening, and it's in a single statement. So we batched all this into one. This is pretty complicated because it has to do get store generated values and things like that out of it. But this is something that EF6 doesn't do, and this can be a big perf benefit in EF Core. I'm going to go back and remove those now just so we have less data to deal with because it's easier to manage. Okay, so now we've created the database, we've saved data into it, and we've got output in the logs that's pretty useful. Let's do some querying now. So what I'm going to do here is actually create a new context instance. I wouldn't have to do that, but EF Core DB Context is designed to act as a unit of work, a unit of work being I get a bunch of stuff from the database, I make a bunch of changes to it, and then I save it back to the database. Or in this case, I do a thing, get a bunch of new entities, and I save them to database. That's my single unit of work. Now, this is my next unit of work where I'm just going to query from those databases, and then I've got some code to print them out. So I'll just run this to make sure it works.
And for those that are concerned, the context is designed to have really low overhead with instantiation. So creating a bunch of context is absolutely fine.
Correct. So now you can see we had the query is logged, as you would expect. And we can see that the output, we've got a blog and multiple posts. One of the things that we introduced in EF Core and we've greatly enhanced in EF Core 5.0 are debug views. And this is where you can see things in the debugger or indeed print them to the console while your application is running. And I'm going to show two of those, right? Actually, I'm going to show three of those. But first, I'm going to show the query debug view, which lets you see the queries. So as you know, iQueryable is delayed evaluation. So this defines the query, but it doesn't actually get executed until I call toList and tell it to give it results or first or something else that says, give me results. And the reason normally you would probably put these into a single line, but I've separated them so we can look at the queryable in the debugger. So I'm going to start this now in the debugger. We're going to get to my breakpoint, and I'm going to make this bigger in a second, but I'm going to go down into, the queryable. I'm expanding the queryable here. Now, it's a little hard to see in Visual Studio. You have to expand non-public members and then go into debug view. We should see if we can make that better. And then there's an expression tree, but what I want to show you in this debug view, and I'm going to copy this, like I said, so you can see it. So this is the same query. So this is the same query that was output in our log, although it hasn't actually been output in our log yet because we haven't executed the query, right? So this is super useful. I'm in my code and I've got the query that's going to be executed before it's executed. And that's the big difference between the debug view and the logging is that you can get information before here. This is also available as a method. You can call toQueryString on the queryable, and that will give you the same thing, so you can print it from the console. The other debug views, you can also go in that I'm going to show you and print to the console. So you don't have to be in the debugger. You can also just do console print line statements to see what's going on, and that's also super useful when you're debugging. Okay, so I'm going to let this run, and I'm going to go up and show you two more debug views now. These are new in EF Core 5. Well, the query one's new in 5.0, and these two are enhanced in 5.0. So I put a breakpoint on save changes now, and I'm going to run the code again. So this is basically before we've inserted anything into the database. So the two debug views I'm going to look at I'm going to expand context, and I'm going to expand model, and I'm going to expand debug view. So this is the debug view of the model. There's a short view and a long view. I'm using the short view. The long view has annotations, which make it harder to read, but if you need that, it gives you more information. So this is a short view of our model. So you can see it's telling us we have an entity type called blog, an entity type called post. And now I can look and make sure the configuration that I thought I had EF set up is actually what EF has set up. Indeed, my ID is set as the PK. If you try and change this after you've called save changes, then it's going to throw. You can't mutate primary keys once you've saved to the database. And it's set up with value generated on add. So this is going to be generated either before or at insert to the database. Likewise, I have this navigation property that says it's pointing to posts and it's in versus blog. And if I go on here, this is the other side of that. So I can see that I have my navigation properties connected up correctly. And then you can see also, even though I didn't have a blog ID in my entity class, because I don't really care about the foreign key, it's kind of a database concern, EF has created one of these in what's known as shadow state. So it will manage this without being in your CLR type, or without it being in your post CLR type. And you can also see that this is a nullable int, and this means that we've created a optional foreign key. So this debug view actually has lots of really useful information. I thoroughly recommend that you look at this when you're doing model building and having trouble figuring out what's going on. But there's more. We also have a change tracker debug view. So if you go into change tracker and also expand debug view, then there's a short view and a long view. So I'm going to show you the long view this time. We'll come to the short view a bit later. So the long view shows me everything about the entities that are being tracked. So it's saying that I have a blog. It's in the added state because, you know, I haven't saved it to the database yet. And because it's in the added state, it has a temporary ID that EF assigned to it. And actually you can see this is temporary because we mark it as temporary in the long list here. And then also you can see the values that we have for all the other properties. These are, you know, trimmed to make it easier to read. It truncates long strings and things like that. But you can see this is basically what we're going to insert. So that's awesome. Let me step over save changes. Save changes, you see these have now gone red. That's because the debug view after we saved is now different because the states have all changed. Sorry, that was the short view. Let me look at the long view again. And in the long view, we can see now all of those PKs have now been set to their actual store generated values. They're no longer marked as temporary. The values have been saved. All of these relations have been set up so that they point to each other. So now you can see, okay, everything went into the database and it all looks good. So that's super useful when you're trying to figure out that why you're getting, oh, this isn't tracked or that has a duplicate key. Look at what's in the state manager and it will really help. Okay, so that's debug views. I love debug views and hopefully they will be very helpful to people. So another thing that this is not so much new in EF Core 5, but it's new to EF Core versus EF 6, and that is we don't have to have such anemic, boring entity types. So basically what you see here is, you know, I've got a public getter and setter for ID. I can manipulate it, change it whenever I want, likewise for name. And then I've got a collection of posts that anybody can add and remove from willy-nilly. We show it like this when we're demoing EF because we don't want to add additional stuff that gets in the way of seeing what EF's doing. But EF is able to deal with properties that have a different shape. So for example, I can have the constructor here. So I'm saying, all right, I don't want to, you know, always have to set these by initializer syntax. I want a constructor. Now I'm going to have to tell EF to use this constructor. I can do that just by saying, okay, call the constructor. I'm going to pass 0 as the ID. We're going to come back to that because that's obviously not ideal. If I don't set the ID, I don't want to have to pass 0 there. But for now, let's just do that. And let me move this up here and put that in the constructor too. So now we've used our code to do the update our code to the constructor. And if I run this, everything works exactly the same. EF doesn't throw saying, oh, you haven't got a parameterless constructor to find. EF sees this constructor, says, right, I can use that. And so it does. But we don't really want to pass our ID here, right? In fact, I would say we don't even really want our ID to be a property, but we'll get to that in a minute. First, let's just create two constructors. I've kept this one, the private one, which takes the ID. So EF is still going to be able to call this to set the ID property. But now, when I'm in my domain model creating entities, I don't have to pass this ID and tell it it's zero. This ID is going to be generated. I don't care. And again, EF will just use this. Everything works the same way. Specifically, let me point out again, this is a private constructor. This doesn't affect how people consuming your objects will see it, but EF doesn't care. It can call a private constructor, so it will use this one. Like I said, though, maybe it shouldn't even be a property because we don't. It's a database concern, the primary key, right? So let's make this a field. And also at the same time, let's make name read-only because we don't actually want people manipulating the name of the blog just willy-nilly. It's supposed to be set once, and then if you have to change it, we'll add logic to that. But at the moment, it's supposed to be read-only. So now I have the ID, an ID field, and I'm still using my constructor here to set it. I've even got this as read-only. And then my public constructor is the only one that exposes stuff that the application needs. I do actually have to add a little bit of configuration in EF for this. You may have not noticed, but so far we haven't configured EF at all. Everything has just been the default configuration that EF does by convention. It's the wrong place to put that. I need to be down in my context. But I'm going to add an on model creating method, and people get scared by this, but it's really pretty simple. What I'm saying here is I have my entity blog, and now I want to use this field as the primary key, but I want it saved in the database still as ID. I don't want it in the database _ID because that'd be weird. And I'm going to say this is my key. And also, because EF doesn't map read-only properties by default, you have to say, even though this is read-only, I still want you to map it. Now, because EF is calling this constructor, it can still set this property, right? So even though this is read-only, when we're querying from the database, everything just works the same as it did before. I'll just keep running it, and it'll keep working the same as it did before, right? There's nothing here that EF can't do. So that's pretty cool. Let's do one more thing. Let's not have this exposed as an iCollection. Let's expose it as an iEnumerable. And if I expose it as an iEnumerable, then I can't add to it directly. So I'm going to add a method to add to that collection. So now my class add an add post, which will add posts to that collection. Now, at the moment, I know because I'm initializing that this is, even though it's exposed as an iEnumerable list, so I'm casting it. And that's not ideal, but it's reasonable for now. Since I've changed the way my blogs are initialized, let me go back up to my code at the top and just update it to not use the syntax for initialization there. And let me just call now, create my new blog, and then call add post for each of the posts. And then I'm putting it in the context and saving it. And it will all work the same way. So you can see now that this is not, when somebody's consuming this, they will see it as an iEnumerable. So they won't automatically think, oh, I can add a post to that and remove a post there. Now, of course, you could cast this still to a list and do that, and we'll show how to avoid that in a minute. But before we do that, let me just make this a property with a backing field. I'm putting posts now in the backing field, right? And then I can just say, oh, actually, inside my internals, that is a list, right? And then if I use the backing field here, now posts doesn't need to be cast, and that's a lot cleaner. Now, EF is perfectly fine with this. It can still quite happily use that as a backing field. And if I run this, it will do exactly the same thing. We could also expose this as an iRead-only list if we wanted to. Doesn't really change anything here, except, again, this could be cast to a real list because it is underneath. I think that's fine. I think, if you have to be that defensive, then probably you need to talk to the consumers of your code. But if you really want to go back to old school Java days and do a defensive copy here, just stick a to list on there. Now, when consumers get this, they're getting a copy. Whatever they do with it, it's not going to affect my entity type. And if I run this again, assuming everything worked, EF just works the same way. It's like taking all of this stuff and it's just mapped it exactly the same way. The only thing I had to do was add a little bit of configuration when I made things read-only and went to fields. So that's a really cool mapping capability in EF Core that EF6 just can't do. EF6 can't do any of that stuff. It has to do basically simple entities. Okay, now that's almost all I have, but before the end, I'm going to show two super new features of EF Core 5 that everybody's been waiting for. The first of these is many-to-many. We have another one of these shows, where part two, where I'm going to go deeper into what's happening under the covers with many-to-many. But for now, let me just go and add to my blogs and posts model here. I'm going to add a tag. You can see here, I've added a tag, entity type, and then I've said, actually, posts all have tags. They can have many tags, and tags can be associated with many posts. So this is a many-to-many. Again, let me add some data so we can see that. I'm going to update my code at the top to actually include some tags as well. Right. Oh, I deleted blog when I shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. So let me do that. Okay. Now we've got blog, we create two tags. And then if I want to associate tags and posts, all I do is say, okay, this post has both the EF tag and the .NET tag. These ones only have the .NET tag. And when I'm querying a many-to-many, it's just like any other relationship, nothing to learn. You just put a query in. And you can include it in the normal way. So in my query here, I've added an include for tags. And then when I'm printing out posts, I'm going to also print out tags. And if I run this, I didn't do any configuration of my model. I didn't change my on configuring. I didn't do anything. And we have many to many. And you can see the query is automatically been created to query the post tag table and everything. Now, this is super magic. I'm going to show in the next session what happens under the covers here. We're going to look at debug views, and we're going to see what's going on inside the internals of EF for this. So I'm not going to say any more about this now, because you have to come back for that one. However, we also added one final feature that people have been asking for a long time in EF Core, and this did not exist in EF6 either. So this is a new for EF Core 5 and very nice for anybody coming from EF6. And it's filtered include. So what I've done here is I've got posts and I've said only include the posts that actually contain 5.0. So these are the F-sharp one. For whatever reason, F-sharp is just a primary version only. So it's not going to get included in this. And then also, this is a many-to-many, but I can do filtered include on many-to-many just the same as anything else. So in this many-to-many, I've said, okay, for the tags, I only want the EF tags. So I just wrote simple query with where's in the include. And if I run this, you'll see that the output now is different from before because we've filtered it. And we have only the posts that have 5.0 and only the tag that has EF. So there's no tags on this one because it doesn't have it. So that is my whirlwind tour of features in EF Core 5. There's lots more. Go look at our doc links, go look at our community standups, go look at our GitHub repo tracker, all the places that you would normally look. There's lots of information out there, and I hope you really enjoy using it.
That was a tour that was true to its name, a whirlwind tour of EF Core 5. Be sure to tune in on our next episode as well, when we do a deep dive of many to many. Thank you.